To sort through some of the major political developments this week, we're joined now by our two regular guest political commentators, E.J. Dionne of The Washington Post and the Brookings Institution. Welcome.
Thank you.
And David Brooks of The Weekly Standard. Welcome back.
Good to be here.
Let's start with the issue that Tom Jelton just raised, that new U.S. alignments will require help from our allies. Now that major combat is ended in Iraq and in Afghanistan, is there going to be a concerted effort to repair relationships with the countries that opposed the war in Iraq, France, Germany, Russia, and how important is it to do that? EJ, do you want to start?
Yeah, I think it's important because we really will face a big argument inside the administration now and in the country. Do we get out quickly or do we stay for a considerable period of time to try to keep the promises we made about building democracy? And if we are going to stay, I think we will not want to be in a position where only American soldiers, say, confronting demonstrators and feeling that perhaps they have to shoot back if they feel under threat. And I think the point of repairing alliances is not to make nice to the world, but to have a situation where this process of transforming Iraq has legitimacy in large parts of the world and where we don't have to do this alone. Because I fear that if we have to do it all by ourselves, we're not going to want to stick with it because the cost could be very high.
David, fence-bending necessary now?
Yeah, I basically agree with everything EJ said, though I would say it's more problematic. You can't just sit down and say, let's get along better. And I've had this situation several times over the past couple months where they get a bunch of American journalists or wonks or whatever you want to call us together in a room with a bunch of European wonks, and we say we come from similar civilization, we share similar values, it's really important we learn to communicate with each other. So we began in this high-minded goo-goo manner, and in 20 minutes we're screaming at each other because we really do see the world in different ways. I saw a poll result from Spain this morning, which the Spanish people were asked, why did the U.S. go into Iraq? 5% thought it was for the stated reasons, weapons of mass destruction, liberate the Iraqi people. 63% thought it was about oil. Now, that's a cultural difference. That's an ideological difference, an intellectual difference. And, you know, it may be that we're from Mars and they're from Venus. And I hope it's no longer the case, but I do think we have to be prepared that the cultural gap, whether we like it or not, and we don't like it, is there and is something that is going to affect what we used to think of as this unified Western alliance.
The last time that the two of you came by to talk with us was at the end of March, and it was a time of a lot of concern about the risks of war, whether there were enough troops on the ground. EJ, you said at the time, the most dangerous kind of punditry is in the middle of the war. We now have a de facto end, if not an explicit end, to combat operations in Iraq. You want to make a dangerous prediction? What will the impact be of this war on President Bush's reelection campaign?
I think that the effect of the war on the presidential campaign depends on two things. We heard today that the unemployment rate went up to 6%. If it stays up there or goes bigger, then the war will loom less large, although national security will not disappear because of 9/11. It also depends on how this occupation goes. I think that those who are critical of the administration are now in a position to say, you own the place, you got what you wanted, are you going to make this work? And there are a lot of questions to be raised about how we handle this occupation and whether we keep our promises.
David Brooks?
I guess I would say since 9/11, the American people learned that Bush is reasonably good at handling unexpected events. Since the Iraq War, they've learned that he's got a reasonably clear moral sense of what is an evil in the world, which a lot of people did, but he was willing to risk his political career and really his presidency on doing something about that evil. And he did something about that evil. He removed it. A tremendous victory for human rights. So he has that. As EJ says, that doesn't guarantee him re-election for a number of reasons. Things could go bad in Iraq. And I'm struck by the vast difference between the Bush approach to foreign policy and domestic policy. In foreign policy, he was progressive, moralistic. He really borrowed liberal language about human rights and, to me, made the Democratic Party look churlish and conservative. On domestic policy, he's not moral. He's not progressive. He's not particularly bold. He hasn't learned the lessons of foreign policy and applied it to domestic policy, which is why I think you get so little spillover onto domestic policy and domestic power from the victory in Iraq.
I think David makes a good point, and it's striking in this Washington Post ABC News poll that came out today that because of how deeply divided we are politically as a country, this President Bush doesn't seem to be getting the kick out of this war that his father did out of the Gulf War. Just two quick numbers. asked whether, as a result of the war with Iraq, Americans were more or less inclined to support the president for re-election. For this President Bush, only 37% said more likely, 24% said less likely. For his father, it was 55% more likely, 6% less likely. Similarly, on whether this enhanced confidence in the president's ability to handle the country's big problem, 43% for this president, 70% for the first President Bush. Now, I don't use those numbers to say I know how this election will turn out, but I do think those speak to a very different spirit that exists at the end of this war compared to the spirit that existed at the end of the first Gulf War.
Why do you think that would be, David?
Well, we learned the lesson of the first Gulf War, that it doesn't necessarily translate into political success. I would also say you had a stronger Democratic field. Bill Clinton was a much stronger candidate than I think any of the likely Democratic candidates are. And the Democratic Party now, unlike Bill Clinton, I believe, has a much higher hurdle to reach on security and defense issues, where they are way behind. If I could just raise a little pet peeve, which is something that is creeping into public discussion, and EJ used the phrase that we own Iraq, I really think it's important to remind ourselves again and again that the Iraqi people own Iraq. And ultimately, the success of Iraq is going to be up to the Iraqi people. We can provide a security framework for them, but we don't own Iraq. They own Iraq. It's going to take local heroes to make Iraq work.
You mentioned the Democratic contenders for the presidential nomination. They'll be debating tomorrow night in South Carolina for the first time. 9 contenders, 90 minutes. What are we likely to hear about, David?
Well, they've got to show these things are for the professionals and the donors, and they've got to show their skills. I'm struck there was an odd poll data that came out recently that shows the American people have forgotten about the Democratic candidates, that it used to be 38% could name one of the Democratic candidates. Now it's down to 31%. So people's awareness have gone down.
You have so many interesting dynamics here. You have Howard Dean of Vermont, John Kerry, senator from Massachusetts, who have been having this dust-up over whether Dean is too soft on defense. At the same time, Kerry is trying to get the dovish vote in the party. So you have that interesting dynamic. You have John Edwards and Dick Ephardt, who both kind of want to be populist candidates. You have Joe Lieberman, who, because he supported the president so strongly, has to get himself somehow back into the good graces of Democratic primary voters who are not well disposed to the president. It's a coming out party for Bob Graham, the senator from Florida. And the Democrats' problem is that 9 people in a debate is not the best format to show off the Democratic Party. It looks like a kind of tea group discussion instead of a real debate. And I don't think there's anything they can do about that.
Okay. Thanks to you both for coming in.
Thank you.
E.J. Dionne is a columnist with The Washington Post and a fellow at the Brookings Institution. And David Brooks writes for The Weekly Standard.